We are back. Joining us in this segment, as promised, is the Sacramento News and Review's Cosmo Garvin, as well as Kim Alexander, representing the California Voter Foundation. Cosmo Garvin's been reporting for the Sacramento News and Review for years. He's been on our show before. We're glad to have him back. Kim Alexander is the president of the California Voter Foundation, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization she refounded in 1994 to advance new technologies to improve democracy. Prior to refounding the California Voter Foundation, Kim Alexander's political experience included 3 years with California Common Cause, where she researched the role of money in California politics. She's also worked in the state capitol and has experience working on political campaigns in the late 1980s and early 1990s. And by the way, if you don't read the Sacramento News and Review, you should. They do excellent investigative articles on a wide range of topics and give you the kind of coverage that you're just sometimes not going to find in the mainstream media. As the article, the paper chase, stated in last week's News and Review, although local voters may not know it, Sacramento is at the forefront of a national debate about paperless voting, as local governments across the country contemplate spending billions to retool and replace the very infrastructure of democracy. Cosmo, let's start with you. We left off last week with the beginning of your article in the News and Review on what is going on with the county supervisors in Sacramento and elections and how votes will be tabulated. For those who didn't read your article, tell us basically what this all means, what the supervisors did.
Well, earlier this month, the county supervisors decided to postpone buying a touchscreen voting system to replace the punch card voting system they use now, which in of itself doesn't seem like news, but they sort of backed off a decision that a lot of people found pretty frightening because there are a lot of problems coming to light now with the new touchscreen voting systems and some concerns about security, concerns about vote tampering, awful lot of concerns about costs.
And you spoke, I guess, with Ernie Hawkins quite a bit, the Sacramento Registrar of Voters.
That's right, yeah. Ernie's the registrar. He'll be retiring sometime this fall, but decided to advise the county supervisors to cancel the bid for now because he couldn't in good conscience recommend a new $20 million system with all the questions that are out there.
So there were basically California, in the wake of election 2000, there's several legal mandates, I guess, that are telling Ernie Hawkins and other registrars of voters in counties across the country that they have to change how things are done. Kim, what are these various legal mandates?
There are several. First of all, there's been a lawsuit that was brought by the ACLU and Common Cause to decertify the punch card ballots that are used in counties like Sacramento. This is the Vote-O-Matic style, Florida-style ballot that we saw so much in the news in 2000. That lawsuit was brought because those groups found that kind of voting equipment was used in large urban counties like LA and Sacramento. And in it being used in those counties, it was disproportionately disenfranchising voters of color who live in large urban counties in California because that kind of voting equipment is not as reliable as optical scan or touchscreen computerized equipment. So the judge agreed and has ordered all 9 California counties using this kind of voting equipment to get rid of it by March 2004. So you've got this federal court order. You also have $200 million in bond funding provided through a vote of California voters in March 2002. That's Prop 41, so there's state funds available to match local dollars spent on new voting equipment. And you have the Help America Vote Act, or HAVA, as it's often called. So all that together is causing California to move a lot faster than a lot of other states in getting new equipment and replacing the old equipment.
So everyone's being told all across the country, you've got to change how things are done.
One of the big issues, the Secretary of State is still pending a decision on, is whether local jurisdictions should be required to install voting systems that provide a paper trail, so-called paper trail, some sort of piece of paper that allows voters to verify with their own eyes that the vote they cast was actually recorded correctly. And there's a couple of different ways that can be done, but it's been an awfully controversial issue, and I think that's probably why it's taken the Secretary of State so long to make a call on that. He convened a task force, which I think Kim can talk about, to look at that issue among other issues, and even their report hasn't been made public yet. both the registrar of voters, some of the sitting supervisors, and a lot of the Sacramento citizens were really concerned about this issue of a paper trail and whether or not they would be able to see sort of where their vote was going and that it was recorded correctly. And I think that had a lot to do with Ernie Hawkins and the supervisor's decision to back off.
So it sounds like the Secretary of State's a little unsure and the Sacramento Registrar of Voters is a little unsure. And Kim, I gather that this issue of a paper trail is something near to your heart.
Yes, it is. I've been working on this issue for several years, and the cause for the voter verified paper trail got a really big boost this year when Professor David Dill, a computer scientist at Stanford, decided to get involved in this issue. And he is a well-renowned expert on security. He came out and said, you know, we can't trust computers to count the ballots. We need some sort of audit trail that we can use to verify the accuracy of the computerized count. He started this petition. It's called the Resolution on Electronic Voting. It's gotten a huge amount of publicity on it. He's doing this all as an individual. He's garnered several hundred signatures from experts in computer security and technology all around the country with labs and universities. All these people have signed on to his resolution. And that has really caused a lot of people to sit up and take notice. And that's what's happened just in the past 6 months since Professor Dill has gotten involved in this effort. It's really caused a lot of momentum to spread on this issue. And I think it's there are a lot of people who are networking through the internet, grassroots activists at the local and state levels all over the country who are energized on this issue, signing petitions, writing letters to elected officials. So there's a lot of activity on the ground, and I think it's only going to continue to grow.
So question for either of you. It appears that California is leading the nation on this. All eyes are on what we're going to do.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, because California has state funding, a lot of other states don't have funding for voting equipment purchases. And because we have this federal court order on 9 of our largest counties in the state, we're moving faster into acquiring new voting technology than other states are. And so people are watching to see what California does. And if California stands up and says, you know what, we need a paper trail, we need voters to verify a piece of paper that we can use to back up these digital ballots, then I think it's going to send a message all over the rest of the nation. One very bright spot of good news on this issue is that in the past 6 months, the three biggest vendors that make voting equipment in the nation, Diebold, ESNS, and Sequoia, have all begun developing paper trail prototypes. So that's after years of people asking them to do this and saying we needed it, and them saying, you know, we can't do it, we don't need it, it's not necessary. Now, largely in response to market demands, they're beginning to develop this technology.
When I was reporting this story, I was just amazed by how taken for granted it was that every jurisdiction in the country was going to purchase an expensive new computer system to run their elections. And I understand that there are problems with the punch card system, but the government officials here locally seem to have a little bit of resentment or some concern about having to be in this position.
Having it forced down their throats, in other words, even though we've never had any trouble. I mean, I use punch cards and they work great.
Yeah, elections seem to, in Sacramento, to have run pretty smoothly. Everyone had a lot of faith in the registrar and the elections department to run the elections. It's kind of a moot point because punch cards are definitely going to be gone, but we're in an awful rush. And I think that's really where the danger is this kind of rush to make these enormous changes to, you know, to our voting technology throughout the nation, and billions of dollars.
Your article mentions some other issues here that may have something to do with what's going on. In Nebraska, Senator Chuck Hagel, Trouse's Democratic opponent, you mentioned it was discovered later that Hagel owned 25% of the corporation that ran the election. I thought that was a little bit interesting.
Freaked people out a little bit, maybe.
With good reason, perhaps.
I gather that there's no evidence of any wrongdoing, of any tampering, but people's perception is really, you know, almost as important as the reality of tampering. And that was something that Ernie Hawkins, the registrar, said. You know, he personally felt there was no way somebody could tamper with one of these systems. He just didn't think it was going to happen. But he's really concerned that voters might perceive that could happen.
He also appeared to be rather cynical. You quoted him as saying in your article that I defy you to find anything in that bill, referring to the Help America Vote Act, that would have made a tinker's dam worth the difference in what happened in Florida. So here's where we've got a solution that's worse than the problem, perhaps.
the way they do their job, it's proper that Florida couldn't have happened here. I mean, he's a little more diplomatic than that about it, but certainly suggested that it had much more to do with procedures and laws than with the technology itself.
A lot of what went wrong in Florida was a matter of there being a lack of procedures and policies in place to describe what happens when ballots are called into question. And we had those kinds of decisions already in California. So if you had a pregnant or hanging Chad, our election officials knew how to deal with it. It wasn't something that people were deciding on the fly. The one word that comes to mind to describe that is transparent. It's totally transparent. There are always two people with the ballots at one time. There's a finite number of paper ballots that exist that all have to be accounted for. It's not the most tree-friendly solution, but it's the way that we know how to make election security work. I watched the whole vote counting procedure. The only part of the process that scared me was when I saw those punch cards being processed through a vote counting machine and I could see software operating on the computer that was tabulating those ballots. And I asked Ernie, who was escorting me around the office that night, you know, how am I supposed to trust this software that's in this machine that's counting these? And he said, oh,
valid question.
Well, and the answer is we have a manual count law, and we've had this law on the books in California since 1965. And it requires for any jurisdiction using any kind of automated vote counting, whether it's paper-based optical scan ballots that get read through a scanner or it's punch card ballots, that a subset of those ballots has to be selected at random and publicly manually tallied by hand to show people that the hand-tallied results match the automated vote count results. And it says right there in California statute, the purpose of the manual count is to verify the accuracy of the automated count. Paper-based elections create a window into the voting process, and it's like the window's being smashed and there's just broken glass all over the floor now, because if it's all computerized, all electronic, and there's no piece of paper that's produced when the voter votes that they can verify and say, yes, this is my count, then we have to rely 100% on software with no audit trail. And at that point, we're basically giving away the entire election process to the vendors who sell these machines. And I'm well aware, Doug, of all of the certification rules, the software testing. I know all that process, and I still am not convinced, and anyone who studied it as closely as I have would not be convinced that we are doing nearly enough to prevent all the different ways that someone could tamper with software used in elections. And the only way we can mitigate that risk if we're going to use computers in elections is to have that voter-verified paper audit trail that we can use to verify the digital count.
We're talking with Cosmo Garvin of the Sacramento News and Review and Kim Alexander with the California Voter Foundation about what may be in your future in terms of how elections are conducted here in California. On next week's show, Greg Palast is going to return to talk about, of course, one of his favorite subjects, which is fraud and elections. I don't think either one of you necessarily want to get into Mr. Palast's position on some of the things that happened in Florida, but I think that this all goes back to the 2000 election and what happened in the state of Florida. Would either one of you care to just have a few words about what happened in Florida?
I think it's interesting how Greg Palast, his research has brought him around to the paper trail issue, because basically what he's looking at is the use of computers in elections and sort of some of the unintended consequences of computerization. And his research and reporting on the purging of the voter rolls using, you know, computerized name matching procedures is very, it was an amazing research, and it really exposed what may well have been a deliberate attempt to disenfranchise certain kinds of voters in Florida and keep them away from the polls. And, you know, it's hard to prove that someone had bad intentions when they were just doing their job the way that the Florida election officials on the ground did their job when they were told that they needed to match the felony rolls from Texas with the voter rolls in Florida. But the fact that he's now interested and involved with the voting technology issue is really interesting to me, because it shows how he sees a connection between, you know, the risk of computers and elections and the unintended consequence. And that's something I've been working on through the California Voter Foundation for almost a decade now. So it's neat to see other people putting these issues together and seeing those broader themes and the risks of moving too quickly, as Cosmo said, into computerization.
Well, he's doing a thing called Commercials with a Conscience, which I think did the Ariana Huffington spot on SUVs. They're going to be doing a series of them, and he'll be doing one in the future on this very issue of fraud in elections.
That's
and how
great.
We, yeah, so we'll hopefully he'll talk about that on next week's show.
When I was doing this story, I didn't dwell a lot on the 2000 election, other than to say that this was sort of what kicked off a lot of this legislation. I was a little surprised that a lot of just regular folks in Sacramento didn't really even know that their local government was addressing this issue. That's not on the radar of a lot of people, at least here locally. And I think, you know, maybe in other counties, the media has done a little bit better job of getting the word out and letting people know what's going on. But here, I'm not sure that that's been the case.
Is this going to be in place by 2004, by the way? I mean, by next the presidential election? It has to be, or?
It's going to be in place here by 2004 is actually a, dare I say, more primitive voting system in a way than what's here now. They've decided in the short term to go with an optical scan system, which is a lot like if you remember taking your SAT in the high school cafeteria, you fill in the bubble and then it's run through a machine
right.
that reads those little blackened bubbles. Now, I'm a little concerned. I saw the demonstration. I think it's actually going to be a little harder to use and to follow your ballot than the systems they have. So I think, in my opinion, it's a bit of a step back in the short term because it's actually going to be harder to use and it may be frustrating to people. I don't know.
It's called MarcaVote. It's going to use the same numbered card the way that the punch card does. So the candidates' names won't be on the ballot. You'll have the sample ballot with you and select your choices by number in the ballot and then mark that number on the card. So people have to be going back and forth between the card and the ballot. That may be kind of confusing for people. And Ernie Hawkins, you know, who's very apologetic about it at the supervisors meeting. I was there and he said, you know, this isn't going to be great. I mean, he said, this is what we're going to do though. We're going to spend $85,000 to retrofit our existing voting system while we let these issues simmer for a while and figure out what the requirements are going to be and what we want to do. Sacramento deserves a lot of credit, by the way, because they were the first jurisdiction in the nation to have voters cast live ballots with the paper backup that was voter verified. And I was one of those 1,600 voters who voted in the early voting experiment last fall in Sacramento. So I really give our supervisors and our election officials a lot of credit.
You mentioned the $85,000 that they're going to be spending in the short run for the sort of interim voting system, and that's versus at least $20 million that they could have decided to spend right then. So it's an awful lot of money to...
Yeah, and anticipated annual operating costs of $5 million on top of that $20 million. Now, some of the $20 million would be reimbursed, but none of those operating costs, the ongoing costs of storing these machines, of financing loans to pay for a $20 million voting system, none of those costs are going to be offset by state or federal dollars. So counties that are seriously considering large jurisdictions like Sacramento that are going to need several thousand machines have to work out the numbers to figure out, well, we have the initial cost, but we also have these maintenance and storage costs. You know, I'm worried about computer bugs in the machines, but it appears that election officials who've used them are far more worried about actual bugs and insects getting in the machines. So you have to keep them really clean and be able to turn them on and power mm-hmm. them up on a regular basis. And it's, you know, it would have nearly doubled Sacramento County's election budget on an annual basis for several years is what our registrar anticipated. That was a big reason why they turned back.
For more information regarding both of our guests today, I would refer you for Cosmo's excellent article to the web, newsreview.com. That's one word, newsreview.com, because it's off the newsstands as of today. But yeah, I would recommend that you go do that. And Kim's group, the California Voter Foundation, would go to calvoter.org.
That's right.
Okay, for more information. And I did, and there was you had a lot of good stuff on there, too, about issues across the country and yeah. schedules and things.
Yes, we track a lot of information on our website, particularly on this issue. So if people really want to dive into the nitty-gritty details, there's quite a bit there at calvoter.org. And anyone who's interested in contacting their elected officials about this, I'd really encourage them to do that. There's a bill in Congress, H.R. 2239 by Rush Holt, that's been introduced that requires a paper trail. Members of Congress can become co-sponsors if people want to contact their representatives and encourage them to do so. That might be helpful. And then there are, of course, state lawmakers and the most important person at the state level, Secretary of State Kevin Shelley. He has a big decision to make. So anyone who's listening who cares to weigh in on it and wants to communicate their concerns or their ideas, however, whatever your view is on this, there's a lot going on. And your county election official, as well as the Secretary of State, are the key people to make this decision.
And Cosmo, you had some thoughts, I think, about in this article about trusting all of our future in terms of elections to some proprietary information of a couple of corporations.
I think one of the things that's most fascinating and most troubling about this whole situation and why I think people should really hound their local officials and really scrutinize this process is that the software that's going to be used to run elections is proprietary software. These companies are off under a lot of government scrutiny. I mean, there's no question about that. But in some sense, it is giving some significant amount of power over to private corporations. The average voter is not allowed to look at this software. It's secret proprietary software. Right. And in a time when we're giving power to corporations over our airwaves, over healthcare, over our food supply, transportation, and everything else, I just think people should not be in a hurry to do that.
Did anything pop up in regards to these companies that you came along that would make you a little nervous?
The Hagel thing is a little
I think that's
scary.
An eye-opener. He's owning the company that's just say, yes, sir, you won.
Other than that, I don't think that there's necessarily a smoking gun or some evidence that we have to worry that these companies are going to be bad actors.
Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And if you get an absolute power to call an election, it does makes me nervous.
Well, and one of the things that I learned from serving on the task force is that the companies that develop the software are doing so in very ordinary software development environments. It's not like it's a matter of national security. It's not like, their work is encrypted. It's not like you have to have some mm-hmm. special password to get in. And there are all these employees in these companies that have access to the keys to the kingdom, literally. And that's what bothers me. One of my coworkers on this issue, David Jefferson, says, elections are a matter of national security. And yeah. we should treat the development of voting technology software as seriously as we would the software that we use to guide aircrafts yeah. and do other high security activities. Cosmo mentioned earlier about the issue of perception, and in elections, it's really important that voting systems be secure both in fact and in perception. And with the Hagel issue, nobody knows one way or another whether there was any influence by Hagel on that election that was inappropriate. And that's part of the problem, is that these voting systems are not transparent enough, and you can't prove or disprove one way or another that anybody's right or wrong. And that's why we need the voter verified paper trail to back up those ballots.
Election needs to be above suspicion.
It needs to be above suspicion. And if you have a paper trail and there is any question raised about the software or ballots that were inappropriately cast, then you've got a paper record that everybody can look at and everybody can know, yes, this is what the record is. This was seen by the voters' own eyes. If it's software and a matter of pushing a button, then you're relying on a handful of people to assure you that everything went right. And that's just not enough assurance for people to find elections to be trustworthy.
Thanks, Cosmo and Kim. We look forward to having you both on the show in the future for related topics or even non-related topics.
Thanks a lot.
Sure, thanks.
We will have more to say on the subject of voter technology and possible voter fraud on next week's show, and we'll be joined by Jacqueline Kane, who's producer of Commercials with a Conscience. One of the upcoming commercials will be a spot dedicated to this very topic with the esteemed writer Greg Palast. Mr. Palast appeared on our program in March and will do so next week in conjunction with the commercial he's going to make about voting machines and the dangers of having non-transparent methodologies that leave no paper trail. This is Radio Parallax on KDVS 90.3 FM. I'm Douglas Everett.